This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Hello, hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. As always, it's like a joy and a pleasure to be with you. America is alive today, folks. If you're in a corner somewhere in an apartment building by yourself, thinking that it's all over now, you know, we've got all this terrible stuff going on, time to rise up. There are so many people out in this world that are doing wonderful things. And my mystery guest, until we get to the first segment, is somebody who is so inspiring. She inspired us 12 years ago. I'm not sure we would have had Donald Trump without her. The book is doing great. COVID-19 and the Global Predator, 62,000 sales. We're zipping along. We're planning a big promotion in the next maybe 2 months. Book is practically brand new, and it's I know, I think it's going to hit 100,000 on. Thank you for your support. Great show.
Join our newest channel on Roku. Go to channel search and enter Brighteon. Brighteon TV on Roku.
Welcome, Jenny Beth Martin. She is the person most responsible for the Tea Party movement back in 2009. And we have loved her since 2009, my wife Ginger and I. In 2010, she was named one of the top 100 most influential leaders in the world. It's got to be the quickest catapult into fame I've ever heard of. And then in 2012, she wrote Tea Party Patriots, the Second American Revolution. And when I named this show and other things that I do, the Refounding America, I think I was probably echoing in my mind her own work, because she was there refounding America before I was, for sure. I really do think that without Jenny Beth Martin, and other people too, of course, she'll tell you immediately other people, But Jenny Beth Martin, without her, there wouldn't have been Donald Trump. There wouldn't have been the real patriot movement that we have now. Interestingly, Jenny, in 2013, there was a poll And that's really soon after you got started, in which 10% of Americans identified themselves with the Patriot Movement. I thought that was great. It was fun researching you because I really am just proud to know you and have you on the show. So by then she's really one of our heroes. And then when along came COVID-19, she did what a lot of us did. She changed her identity partly, risked a whole new standing up for freedom, a whole new taking it on the nose or wherever else they could hit us for standing up for freedom. And she came on the scene really with a roar in July 2020. She had a delegation to Congress and to the president, and she had a medical summit and a press conference. And it was so successful, and her million or more viewers, they took it down off all the social media, and you were ahead of us in being taken down. We got pulled off of YouTube. We got pulled off of YouTube 45 minutes after I released a video on it announcing COVID-19 and the global predators. 45 minutes after. And so welcome to the show. I want to get to know you more. I want to be friends with you. We really have admired you from a distance. Where would you like to start? I have got no particular agenda here for you.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm just really glad to be with you today. And I think that one thing that people who are watching may be wondering, what does the Tea Party movement have to do with doctors and COVID, and how does that possibly align? We got a lot of those questions last year, and I just would point out to people that one of the biggest issues, one of the first issues that the Tea Party movement took on and opposed was Obamacare and the passage of Obamacare. And back beginning in 2009, we were standing for the doctor-patient relationship. And we, last year in 2020, we saw that doctor-patient relationship eroding and being replaced with government bureaucrat-patient relationship. And it was very alarming to us, and we wanted to get in and try to figure out what we could and to help protect that doctor-patient relationship, which sort of it briefly explains how we got involved with working with doctors, which we'll talk about some, I'm sure.
Well, healthcare is one of the most important freedoms, not rights, folks, but a freedom for us to create and to benefit from. And it's one of the great advancements, but it is also one of the great weapons of oppression. And socialized medicine is a weapon of oppression. And the biggest people associated, the first people most associated with Adolf Hitler were German psychiatrists, not even Nazi psychiatrists, plain old German psychiatrists. They just loved Hitler up and they started murdering patients before he did. So there is a history of both the beauty of medicine and the dangers of medicine.
That is right. And in fact, back in 2012, we did a documentary about healthcare and healthcare freedom. And Dr. Claire Gray was the primary doctor in the documentary that we did. And he always talks about the he takes it back even further than World War II, and he talks about the difference between Hippocrates and Plato, and how Hippocrates was for the patient and Plato was for the good of society, in essence. And
Yes.
That documentary goes through a philosophical approach and a difference in philosophy for how you deal with healthcare. And I think had I not learned that kind of thinking from Dr. Gray back in 2012, I would not have been prepared for what we've been able to do to help doctors in 2020 and 2021, and now into 2022 even.
Well, we're surely glad to see you in the movement. Talk some more about what you've been doing. Just tell folks about what you're doing in the movement.
So, back, I started to say last year, but now we are actually in 2022. So back in 2020, when everything started shutting down across the country, I was very alarmed. And I can go through reasons why I was so so alarmed personally about what was going on. But one of the things that concerned me, I wanted to make sure that we were reopening the country. I didn't want us to be in a point where we were shut down and locked down for any longer than absolutely necessary. And honestly, I kind of thought that even in the beginning, locking down was not a good choice for America. But it was one that as a country, we decided we were willing to do 2 weeks to slow the spread. And then Vice President Pence and President Trump and others asked us to give it 30 more days. And we were willing to do this as Americans while doctors and the healthcare professionals got their hands around this new virus that was in the world. But as that was going on and people could not go to visit the doctor, I just began getting worried about the things that were considered non-essential healthcare and non-essential workers and what these secondary effects were going to be on people who were no longer working, no longer able to provide for their family, or maybe they were postponing medical treatment that they'd had scheduled for a while and that they really needed, but it was no longer deemed absolutely necessary in the beginning of this pandemic. So we started reaching out to different doctors and just reaching out to doctors who I heard were asking some of the questions that I was asking and trying to get a sense of what is going on with the virus to make sure that my desire to reopen the country was not actually going to put my fellow Americans at a great, great risk. And so we launched a project called the Second Opinion Project through Tea Party Patriots Foundation. And I started interviewing doctors. And I interviewed about 40 or 50 doctors over the course of about a week. I sat with my videographers and my producers in their basement, and we just went through day after day after day, all day long, interviewing one doctor after another, asking what they were seeing and what they were hearing from their own patients and what their concerns were. And from that experience, we wound up sending letters to President Trump about reopening the country that over 800 doctors initially signed, and later it was over 1,000, helping set up listservs for doctors to communicate with one another. I took a delegation of doctors to Washington, D.C. to meet with members of Congress in July of 2020. And then helped organize some of the same doctors and some different doctors in D.C. again a few weeks later to do a summit about what they were learning and seeing related to COVID and explaining what they were seeing to other doctors, but also to patients so that they could explain that we're looking patients in the eye, we're touching real skin, we're diagnosing people who have COVID, and we're helping them find ways to beat this disease so that it doesn't automatically mean that it is a death sentence for people. And then from that, we wound up doing a press conference in front of the Supreme Court. That press conference went viral. It launched the America's Frontline Doctors, kind of launched from that event, the summit that we did and the press conference, and the world wound up learning about America's Frontline Doctors. And before the end of the day, the press conference happened, I think, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and before 11 o'clock at night, we were completely censored and our videos were removed offline, and any reference to or any clip from it, the social media companies were taking down. And we knew we were striking a nerve because we weren't telling the same narrative that were the mainstream media. And my advice to the doctors, I really just urge them, be truthful with people, of course, and give them a sense of hope so that they're not so afraid. People need to know that they can have hope in America again. And that's what they did that day, but that didn't match the panic porn that we were seeing in all of the media outlets. And I just don't think that there were forces in America that really didn't want us to have that kind of hope. They wanted to keep us very, very afraid still.
Probably what Ginger and I have done most carefully is look into what those forces are. They really go back to international coalitions that are somewhat loose and yet also pretty tightly connected between Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab with the Great Reset, working very early on with the agency members in the U.S. in BARDA, who wanted to fund the drug companies when the next pandemic came, and then on with the World Health Organization. Gates had an organization that actually made an agreement with the World Health Organization to divide up the world in the next pandemic, that the Gates and the billionaires he was working with and Moderna and Pfizer 6, 7, 8 years ago, maybe longer, they were already talking about Moderna and Pfizer and working with the World Health Organization to make sure that all this happens and that the governments would pay all the expenses. We found an agreement that set up between the two of them that they would make sure the governments paid all the expenses of the drug companies. And then we link it back to totalitarianism, to communist China, their influence, the UN and World Health. And Gates working with the UN early on, which I didn't know until we found, and Klaus Schwab working with the UN. So we really filled out a picture that kind of gives a terrifying specter, but a truthful specter, a real specter to what is descending on the country. And it's all about the vaccinations from the very beginning. And from 2010, they were out to have the decade of the vaccine. They announced it 10 years earlier than they've made it come true. More wealth, more money, more power. I don't know if you had a chance to examine that overall view, but I hope you'll take a look at it. And I
haven't examined every single detail that you just mentioned, and I do need to read your book. I'm in the middle of reading Robert F. Kennedy's book right now. In July of 2020, sometimes I just think I've seen Washington D.C. politics, so I'm not exactly naive. I know, and I can be a pretty cynical person, but I look back on what was happening then, and I think that some of what I thought was going on may have been a bit naive, because I didn't at that time realize that there was such a push for drugs and the drug companies and the pharmaceuticals and the vaccine. We at that press conference, we had doctors who were talking about hydroxychloroquine and talking about how it was helping, especially if you treated someone early with COVID, how it was making a difference. At some point I wound up meeting, and I haven't ever met face to face, but I've gotten to know Dr. Harvey Risch, and he's done studies about how it really could reduce hospitalizations if given early.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, since then I've learned
death.
More.
And deaths.
Right, and death, because the death was happening after hospitalization. So if you reduce hospitalization, then you also would be reducing death too. And then I've learned more about ivermectin over the 18 or 19 months since July of that year. But what I didn't realize at that time was I knew that we were dealing with generic drugs, and I understood that you don't make as much money with generic drugs as you do with newer medications. But what I've watched happen over the last nearly 12 months now with the vaccines and not just the vaccine. It's one thing to have a vaccine and make it available. What I've watched happen with the mandates related to the vaccines has just, that's where I sit there and I think, gosh, I really was a little bit naive back then, because I didn't quite understand what the scope of what was coming. I started figuring it out pretty quickly, but in July, as we started getting censored, I thought, well, it's just that we're talking about things and we're reducing the fear. And I thought it was much more about the contrast with the message of hope versus the fear that the media was sharing by showing the tickers on the constant, this is the number of cases, this is the number of deaths, this is the number of hospitals, and all of the numbers that just sort of stirred up anxiety among people. And now I look back and go, it wasn't just about the media companies, but it was about, I do think it really was about these pharmaceutical companies and a lot of things that I didn't realize just how deep corruption runs in the country and in the world.
It was amazing to us to get so deep in. And one of the things that a lot of people don't know is the reason they had to crush ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine is they couldn't use the emergency use authorization legislation if there was an existing safe and effective treatment that was FDA approved.
Right.
And those drugs are FDA approved, so they're safe. In fact, they are among the two safest drugs in the world that are in widespread use. I'm really an expert on adverse drug effects. And if they were available, then they could not fund the drug companies. They couldn't cover all their expenses. They couldn't rush them through the FDA. The entire emergency use authorization legislation dies on the doorstep of one existing safe and effective treatment. And that is why they have corrupted the entire medical profession. And I've talked to doctors. I talked to a doctor a month ago who couldn't refill his own prescription for himself for ivermectin. He already had one filling, but nope, they caught up. He couldn't refill. So this oppression of doctors so they can't treat their patients themselves or their families, including me as a doctor, is wholly new, and it's the result of planning that we track back to 2015 with the FDA redeveloping the EUA and with Bill Gates announcing that he's working with Moderna and Pfizer. They're going to rush through their products. In fact, they actually got through the two products they announced in 2015, Moderna's vaccine and Pfizer's, out of hundreds of potentials. So it's that deeply embedded in industry, but also in controlling world affairs. I want to go. You mentioned Bobby Kennedy's book. It's a very good book, and I work with Bobby. Ginger and I are on his not very large legal committee. But Bobby generously, never read this on the air before, while his book was coming out, he gave us an endorsement. And what he said was, no other book so comprehensively covers the details of COVID-19 criminal conduct, as well as its origins, in a network of global predators seeking wealth and power at the expense of human freedom and prosperity, under cover of false public health policies. So he endorsed our book. This is a great book. It's on focuses on Fauci. He endorsed our book as the book for the underlying stuff. And we'll get you a copy.
And Dr. Bregan, I want to just jump in and say one more thing. I have read that Robert Kennedy Jr. did that, but I also have seen that Dr. Peter McCullough has endorsed your book. Personally. From Dr. Robert Malone, he has talked highly about your book, and he's read it. So these doctors who are making it, some of the names of these doctors, your audience are going to be familiar with because they've now been on Joe Rogan's show, but they also are endorsing your book.
And I don't, you know, I often don't talk quite this much about the book on the shows, but I think it's the most important thing Ginger and I have ever done in our lives is to, you know, with all the other books we participated in, many, many books, scientific articles, that this is the most important thing for humanity that we've done. And I think it's, that is actually why I do feel I've got to talk about it. This is something we had to do. It took us 16 months working between 8 and 15, 16 hours a day. Jenny Beth, we have... we have 1 minute, 30 seconds. Say a few words, and then we'll go to the next segment after the ads.
Well, I think that one of the things that I just want to say is we're wrapping up this section. We've talked about your book and Robert F. Kennedy's book. I think some of what we're talking about seems shocking to people when they first hear it. I mentioned how I felt really naive. Yeah. Looking back, I think it was rather naive. But you mentioned earlier to me you have 600, I think you said 600 or 1,000 references in your book, Robert Kennedy's book. There, you, it's not like you're just making this up out of whole cloth. You have reference. You probably have more references or as many references as you do actual pages of the book.
And more than one reference a page, yeah.
And I think it's important for people to understand that there's a lot going on, and it takes a lot of research to see that there are a lot of things to be very concerned about. But I do still think we can make a difference, and we can talk more about that woman when we come back.
Let's talk about making a difference. This is a woman who has made a difference in our lives. I mean, when we heard you speak and heard about the movement, it really got us to really thinking more and more about what we were doing. And I just thank you. Thank you for being there. And thank you for doing what you're doing, and keep it up. And on to the next segment soon.
Join our newest channel on Roku. Go to channel search and enter Brighteon. Brighteon TV on Roku.
We're back. We're back with Jenny Beth Martin, a hero of mine, a hero of Ginger's. We tried to get in touch with her, I think, for 12 years and couldn't manage to get through whatever your protections were. So we just lassoed her onto the show. And that way we're getting to know, And it's a pleasure. Where would you like to pick up with Jenny?
Well, I was saying that I think that people can make a difference. And I want to, if it's okay, I want to tell just a little bit about how I got involved with the Tea Party movement and,
yes,
and why I was so worried about businesses closing and the effects of it. Back in 2007 and 2008, my then husband, I'm now divorced, but my then husband, his business went through financial crisis, which means that we personally went through financial crisis. And as the recession was going on in 2008 and 2009, we went through bankruptcy. So we lost everything.
Oh,
and
wow.
At the time that, this was happening, we did not imagine that we would, that the story would become such a public part of our lives and who we are, but we didn't hide it either. We just accepted that the business went bad and we were going through this terrible financial crisis. And then, so that was going on, and we were opposed to the TARP bill and the bank bailouts and the TARP bill. And then President Obama was elected, and one of the first things that he and the Congress did were passed a stimulus bill on top of the bank bailouts and on top of TARP. And we were opposed to that. And then Rick Santelli, who is a commentator for CNBC, had this rant on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange complaining about the stimulus bill and about people who would be paying for their neighbors' homes who had more bathrooms than them. And he said, "Who here wants to do that?" And everyone said, "No, no, boo, boo." And he said, "We need to have a tea party like our founding fathers did." Well, that really, really spoke to me, because at the time that we heard that rant, my then husband and I were actually cleaning our neighbors' homes who had more bathrooms than we were cleaning their bathrooms rather than taking money from the previous bank bailouts to stay in a house we could no longer afford.
Yeah.
So we were making sure that our neighbors, that their tax money did not bail us out. We accepted responsibility, and when the money from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac was dangled in front of us, we said no to that, because we were opposed to that. We didn't think it was right for the government to be bailing it out, and we sure didn't think it would have been right for us to be a recipient of something we thought was wrong. So we were opposed to it. We heard him say that, and I just was like, we have to have a tea party. I don't know what one is, but I'm going to have a tea party like he just did. So I got on Twitter, organized with about 22 other people or so, and we had tea parties a week later around the country. 6 weeks after that, we had tax day tea parties. We had over 850 tax day tea parties with more than 1.2 million people around the country who attended those events. And about 6 months later, on September 12th, we had a 9/12 march on Washington, D.C., a taxpayer march on Washington, D.C., and we had 1.5 million people in D.C. for that march. So it just very, very quickly went from a rant on CNBC that went viral to having this massive march six months later on Washington, D.C. So in that time, we stood up for what we believed in. We stood for personal freedom, economic freedom, and a debt-free future. Those were the three core values. They're still our values. And as we stood for those core values, we stood against Obamacare. So I mentioned how we were engaged in Obamacare in 2009 and 2010, fighting against that. So then when you fast forward to 2020, to 2020, as things, I started hearing from Steve Bannon's War Room show about what was happening in China related to the pandemic in January of 2020. And I was warning people in my circles in February that this virus was coming, that I thought that that China had shut down. I was worried that we were going to see a recession or economic troubles in our country and that we were going to lock down as well. And most people were not listening to Steve Bannon's pandemic war room the way that I was. So they kind of thought I was off my rocker. They've since understood that I wasn't. I just was really paying attention to what Steve Bannon was tracking. And I knew enough because I had previously worked to program computers and I worked for some Fortune 500 companies programming computers. So I was familiar with the supply chain. I worked in a paper mill, and then I worked for the Home Depot in Atlanta. And so I was familiar with the supply chain in America and how factories work and also how imports come into the country. And I knew that if China shut down, that a month later, we were going to run in, a month to 2 months later, we were going to run into problems in our country if the things that were being manufactured in China were not making it across the ocean to get here. So I was just concerned about things from my background. And then when we actually did lock down, I knew what it was like if you own a small business or a medium-sized business and you have fixed expenses, those expenses stay, rent, mortgages, the insurance, the salaries for employees, the overhead expenses, they stay pretty, generally they stay pretty flat. So those expenses happen. But if all of a sudden the expenses are here and then your income drops, you're going to run into financial problems. And that is part of what happened with the business failure that I had experienced previously in my life. So I was really concerned about the small and medium-sized businesses that they may not have enough padding to be able to handle 15 days to slow the spread or an additional 30 days to slow the spread. So I just felt this sense that I had to do everything that I could to look out for those people who would be losing their jobs, who wouldn't be able to put food on the table for their own families, who might wind up losing their houses, going through some of the same kind of things that I had already experienced. And I was just raising the red flag going, you know, these things have consequences. And that's part of how I wound up getting involved in wanting to learn more about COVID to try to get the country reopened. It was just that I know the misery of going through personal financial crisis, and I became very worried about people in our country who would be going through that as well. I also was worried about schools being closed and the impact that would have on children. I was watching what was happening to my own teenage twins. But then I was also just thinking, you know, schools help stabilize our society. Locally, we set the calendar and traffic patterns by when school starts, when school's out, when you have Christmas vacation or winter break or whatever it is. There are things that the school calendar does in a local community that kind of sets the calendar for adults, whether you have children or not. And if all of a sudden school was out, I thought that that would wind up being rather destabilizing for our community. So I started pushing that we needed to get schools open for all sorts of reasons. The kids needed the education, and then we needed to make sure that not only did they need the education, but we needed that stabilizing force. You can't just flip a switch and have the kind of abrupt change that we had in our country. So those are some of the reasons that I became so passionate about this issue. And my team and I, we work with doctors right now around the country. We're working with them constantly. Last night I was on a conference call with doctors until 10 to 11 o'clock at night, just because I can't help myself. I am looking at emails from doctors and I'm constantly just going, what can I do to help? Because I know that these doctors are trying to help reduce the fear, to treat COVID early, and to try to warn people about some of the consequences and side effects of the vaccines.
Well, it's a blessing that you're here. You have a lot of political grassroots kind of experience that we don't have on the show very often, and that Ginger and I are pretty distant from. What's your assessment? Do you think we're going to have a revival of freedom in the next elections? Do you think we can overcome the election fraud to do it? What, can you talk about that?
Yes, I do think we're going to have a revival, and here's why. First, we can look at what happened in the 2021 elections. So we had elections in 2021, they're off-year elections. In Virginia, we're going to have a Republican governor, a Republican lieutenant governor, a Republican attorney general in Virginia, and we haven't had that in over, I think, 12 years now in Virginia. Democrats have gone in and polling in focus groups trying to figure out exactly what happened, kind of a post-mortem of the 2021 election in Virginia. And one of the things that they have found is people were concerned, parents were concerned about critical race theory and social justice theory in their school boards. But what they were really the most concerned about was the fact that their kids could not go to school. And they were holding people accountable when they went to the polls. They were holding those accountable who kept their children from being able to go to school. And I think that the way that I have described this is that it's parents going, you stop hurting my child. You have to stop hurting my children. I'm not going to I'll put up with a lot of inconveniences for myself, but when you hurt my children, you're crossing the line. And I think that because of that, we are going to see a revival in this country. So yes, reopening the country and healthcare freedom and preventing vaccine mandates are all very important. I think that the thing that is going to be the most motivating is for parents or grandparents who've watched their children or grandchildren suffer because of these government mandates and because of the extreme measures that some areas of the country have taken. And then you can contrast it to states like mine. I live in Georgia, look at Florida, and in Florida, in where I live, schools were open, kids still were able to go to school, masks have always been optional at my school, not required, and our outcome with COVID hasn't been different than, dramatically different one way or the other, than places that locked down. So we did not have to cause harm to children. So I think that's going to make a big difference. Now, you asked about election fraud. There are people who are very concerned because they've watched what happened in the election in 2020, and they've lost confidence in the outcome of the elections. Well, in Virginia also, there was a group of people, a coalition of over 80 groups who worked to make sure that the elections were secure and that people could have faith in the outcome of the elections in Virginia. And that coalition in Virginia is going around and training other activists around the country to help them be involved and to teach citizens what they can do to help make sure the election laws are being followed and the rules and regulations are being followed as much as a citizen is able to do to ensure that we have clean and fair elections where each vote counts, that is, but no vote is canceled out by an illegitimate or improper or even illegal vote. So you want each vote to, each legal vote to count, and that's what they're working on. We want to make it easy to vote, but hard to cheat.
I think I just saw today that Joe Biden announced that that he was going to mandate the masks for the children in the poverty programs, the poor programs, what are those called? Head Start programs. Did you hear anything about that yet?
I haven't seen that, but I just think that you're a doctor. You understand these are not things that are going to help prevent the spread of COVID. And it's just, not only does it not help prevent the spread, but also we know that children are not the ones who are going to die even if they get sick with COVID. And so what are we doing? In fact,
Jenny, as a doctor, I know that if when children get COVID, they get immunity, which they do not get when they get the vaccines, and that the death rate from vaccines in children is going to unquestionably be multiple times the death rate from COVID, because that's almost zero.
Right.
And now with the weakening of the, it becomes even more ridiculous. And really, the widespread Omicron right now is basically vaccinating people better than the vaccines are. So now it's a disaster. And one of the things we found is, again, all this was planned in advance, that the idea that everybody would have to take the vaccine was fundamental to thinking of someone else who wasn't a doctor, Klaus Schwab, who's basically a socialist, wealthy man, billionaire combination, these weird combinations we have now, you know, who wants to dominate the world along with lots and lots of other people. And they said from the beginning that everybody would have to take a vaccination because that's a demonstration of power. It's a demonstration of control. It creates docility. And if they can do this, if they can get away with, as they seem to be, without a multi-million march, vaccinating our children against their wishes and wishes of the parents, vaccinating them at all, they will have proven that they can get Americans to do just about anything. And I hope there'll be a real rise up movement to get out in the streets peacefully, be Martin Luther King, you know, be Gandhi, get out in the streets and say no to vaccinating our children. It's a really good beginning, but I'm not seeing much happen around that.
Well, I think part of the reason we don't see that happening in America the same way that we've seen that happen in other countries is that one, we haven't been as locked down in America as other countries have. It hasn't been uniform across the entire country. So you have pockets within states that are more free, if you will, and then you have states themselves that are more free than other states. So I think that has made it different than some of what we've seen with other countries. But we have seen a lot of demonstrations, and there is a demonstration that's coming up on January 23rd, Sunday, January 23rd in Washington, D.C. The Unity Project is doing it, and their plan is to march from the Washington Monument to the Lincoln Memorial and then have an event at the Lincoln Memorial that would be completely peaceful, that is, it's a demonstration more than a protest. So it would be more of a demonstration against a lot of what is happening rather than a protest. And I think that is, I think we'll see that's going to be fairly well attended. I know that a lot of the doctors are talking about it and mentioning the dates. And I'm seeing now that activists also are talking about it and making plans to go to Washington, D.C. So we'll see how that happens. And we may have that event in America. But I do think we haven't had that same kind of event here in America, mostly because there has not been a one-size-fits-all lockdown across the entire country the way there have been in other other countries.
Yeah. Well, we've got 3 minutes left. I want you to just continue to talk about your work, what you think is really going to work in the future, and maybe give encouragement to people. I mean, you are the living example of somebody who out of the blue decides that she's going to take this stuff on way back in 2009 and builds a real big impact, a real important impact for America. And you don't have to become a Jenny Bethel Martin, folks, or a Peter Bregan or anybody like that. You can change your school board, or you can influence your neighbors, or you can run for sheriff or run for some other office where you can influence the direction of lives in your community. You can get voters out. There is so much that individuals can do, and we have to rise up. And who knows, you might even be the next Jenny Beth Martin, who's just going to change the world.
Well,
Go ahead, finish up.
I think that's really, really important. I did take action, and I had no, the very first protests that we did, we didn't even think about how you needed a PA system or even a bullhorn. We just were not protesters on the conservative mm-hmm. side. But I started getting involved in politics even earlier than that, and showing up at Republican Party meetings and at precinct meetings and being active on campaigns and just volunteering and taking actions and picking up the phone and making phone calls to my congressman even before I started going to meetings. It's just those little actions. We need those actions. You don't have to be the person who's in charge of a group. Certainly, if you want to be, we'll help you get organized at Tea Party Patriots Action. But we need people who pick up the phone and make the phone calls and melt the phone lines or show up at the events or just be educated enough on the issues and the facts that you can explain and spread the word to other people, whether it's sharing podcasts and shows like this one with other people. Every single bit of it is important. When I began all of this, one of my neighbors made sure to remind people it's like a rope. Each one of us is a thread, and the thread alone isn't very strong, but together it's hard to penetrate.
Jenny Beth Martin, thank you so, so much for being on Refounding America. It's a joy to know you and to meet you. And folks, we again have our book up now, I didn't mention, on wearethepray.com. So you can get the book at a reduced rate over anywhere else on wearethepray.com. And Jenny Beth, any further word about where people can join you? You mentioned it, maybe you could repeat it. We got 15 seconds.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoyed it. And people can go to teapartypatriots.org. Again, that's teapartypatriots.org to get involved.
Join the fight for freedom, folks. You'll meet wonderful people and maybe your neighbors.